Welcome to the Data Able podcast, where Dave Mathias and Matt Jesser dive into data. Each week, they cover the culture, knowledge, and practices that successful organizations, leaders, and individuals use to get value out of data.
Welcome to another episode of Data Able. This week, we have a really special guest, Rachel Stuve. She's worked in data analytics for over 15 years in an array of industries from healthcare, software, manufacturing, automotive, and government. Rachel's been responsible for aiding customers in effectively creating and applying data analytics programs, developing and deploying next generation analytics tools in the healthcare space, managed workflow and auditing products in manufacturing, and leads reporting and data conversation teams within government businesses. She has various formal education credentials in IT, including a bachelor in information systems, as well as a master's in business leadership, as well as other various technical certifications. Based in Atlanta, she's very active in the analytics community there through different speaking and volunteer events, which I think we'll talk about in a little bit. We're really excited to have Rachel on the show. Welcome.
It's good to be here.
It's great to have you, Rachel, like Matt was saying, and we're going to kick things off with a few rapid-fire questions just to get things going and for the audience to learn a little bit more about you. And we like to kick it off with our first one. It's always one that is a fan favorite, and that's, what is your data superpower?
Great question. So my data superpower is what I call kind of demystifying the data for users. So one of the things that I love to do is take these complex concepts or findings from data and simplifying it down and breaking it down into truly actionable insights.
Actionable is good, right? So we, it's always the challenge is taking the complex and making it simple. So if you were a data viz, what data viz would you be?
Yeah, that's also a great question. If I was a data viz, I have been thinking about it. I would be a heat map. So heat maps are one of my favorite visualizations because they can break down multiple concepts into one visualization that can show not just how they relate to each other, but also the intensity. So I would definitely be a heat map, just in the sense that I find that to be one of the quickest and most powerful visualizations for simplification.
So also, who is your data hero?
Yeah, my data hero. I have a lot of data heroes, but I think my data hero are kind of the everyday users that really do truly leverage data to use decision, to make decisions. I think that there's a lot of talk about the data, importance of data and what we can do with it. But my data heroes are the people that are actually using that to make decisions. So kind of the everyday hero.
So one of the things we love to do on this show is learn about other like great books and podcasts and other places to learn. So we want to get your take. What is your favorite book? It could be analytics related or maybe not, but something that you think our audience would really benefit from.
Yeah, there's actually two books. So one of my favorite books is called Made to Stick, and it's by Dan Heath and Chip Heath. And it really talks about how to influence ideas and decisions and why do some ideas thrive and others don't. It's not specifically related to data, but it's just a great, easy to read, breaking down concepts into simple stories and case studies and kind of really application into real life. So that's one of my favorite just general business books. There's also a new book that I've just started reading by RJ Andrews called Info We Trust. And that is a really, what that book is talking about is how to inspire the world with data and use different types of visualizations, or where is it appropriate to apply data or not apply data to make decisions. There's a lot of drawings in the book. I think it's a great book for people to check out specifically, and that one is specifically related to data.
That's great. I've been hearing a lot about RJ Andrews's latest book. I'm excited to pick it up myself. I've not done so yet. So now might be the time.
It's a good book. It's a very visual book, which is a great way to learn.
Makes it interesting. So who is your all-time favorite storyteller? We hear a lot about storytelling in data and analytics now. Who's a great storyteller that you really admire? And this could be, you know, again, in the analytics space, or maybe not, maybe just a really fun storyteller that we can learn something from.
I really like Simon Sinek for his storytelling. I love his TED Talks. I follow his TED Talks. I follow some of his other kind of speaking on YouTube. He's probably one of my more favorite storytellers. I also, just on that topic, really enjoy the TED Talks. I think there's a lot of different perspectives and different storytellers on there in all sorts of different concepts. And the interesting thing that I find about storytelling and data is that the story doesn't necessarily have to be specifically related to data, but just exposure to different ideas and concepts and ways of thinking that then you can apply back into the data world.
Yeah, absolutely. Dave and I are both big fans of TED Talks as well. And one thing I like to do is actually notice the structure of how they structure all of their talks. You can really start to find patterns in how they craft that story together to make it really impactful, like suck you in early and then keep you going with a big final ending. And I think we can do that in our presentations, in the analytics world too. Apply some of those templates and some of those the ways that they tell those stories.
Yeah, I like that because it starts with really the core message, and then it kind of builds outside of that to support that core message. So I agree with the format on that.
What's a trait or skill that you think is most undervalued in industry today?
I think one of the traits that's most undervalued in the industry is really the trait of clear communication and public speaking. So one of the things that I tell people that I mentor, that we talk about in meetings, is you could find the most insightful finding or the most interesting algorithm you could create, but it really isn't going to matter if you can't explain that to people so that they understand the importance of it and the impact of it. So I think that communication, being able to talk to people, being able to convey your ideas, how to kind of influence, it's one of those things that is so critical to the data industry, but isn't something that is often put into job postings or hiring managers talk about. And that's, to me, probably the most important skill.
Yeah, I think it sort of falls under the thing that they put at the end. Good interpersonal skills or good communication skills. It's like this thing, and it's clearly at the end of like 30 things. And by the time you get down there, you're like, oh, okay, so how important is that? Is that really the first thing? And I do think, some of these soft skills, putting these up near the top and emphasizing that importance in job descriptions would be a really good way, and showing like not just the, hey, we're looking for like phenomenal people at this versus phenomenal Python programmers, and both skills are important, but what's the job, how much is it going to take of communication skills and influencing others? So great point. Now I want to get a little bit more into you. Matt had given that intro at the beginning, but tell us a little bit about yourself and what makes Rachel Rachel.
Yeah. So I've been into data analytics for over 15 years. When I first started my career, it wasn't called analytics. It was just called database. At that time, it was mainframe or this new tool that everyone loved called Microsoft Access, which I'm sure we all remember. And my career's kind of progressed through database administration, reporting, and then really when decision science and analytics really came into play, it really attracted me because it was a great avenue for creating and problem solving within an industry that just rapidly changed. So I've been doing analytics in my career in various capacities, customer facing, internal. I've managed teams both onshore, offshore, across the globe, different customers across the globe as well. And I love that really kind of data analytics side in my career.
So, Rachel, I know you've done kind of the analytics management side of things. So when you think to your skill set and your specializations and what you can really bring to an organization, I know you talked a little bit about kind of that front end user, helping them understand and translate that data. What are some of the other like specializations that you have in your toolbox? Would you consider yourself more on the management side of the analytics equation, more of like the data visualization side, the database architecture side, or maybe the data science side?
Yeah, it's a little bit of a combination. I'd say more on the management and data science side of it. So the thing I found is that the business community has really embrace the message on the importance of data. So we're collecting it, we're organizing it, and we're really understanding that there is an impact and advantage to data-driven decisions within an organization. But really where the gap lies is how do we actually leverage that? So it's kind of a situation of, yeah, sure, we collect it and we know it's important, but now what? So the specialty that I have and where I've been helping organizations is, okay, is that kind of now what? Or why do I care? Or what do I do with it? Or where do I even start? So a lot of where I come in is really helping organizations to kind of identify what they're really, what are your true goals? And then let's look at your sub-goals. And then let's continue to ask supplementary questions. And then now that we have that business aspect established, now let's see what data we need to really to support that. I've seen some organizations that kind of start with the data and then fill their questions in. And for me, I haven't found that to be as successful because I feel like those organizations are not being true to the goals that they have. Where I have found more success in, let's start with your goal and then let's see what data do we have or what do we need to collect to really support that goal and help you achieve that goal.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I was just talking with an organization recently, and we had this exact same conversation. And one of the things that came out of that conversation was, if you looked at like an organization's top five priorities, data shouldn't be one of the top five priorities because it shouldn't have its own bullet point. Data should support the five priorities of the organization in whatever they're doing, right? It's the tool that helps the organization achieve the goals, whatever those goals are that they have.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think the key is really defining your business goals and then letting that drive your data, not the other way around. And I think that there are organizations that start the other way with the data first, simply because they may not know where to start, or they hear kind of the buzz, or they know the importance of it. So that's one of the things I really thrive is let's look at your goals and then see how that data can support that.
When you're thinking about the data space right now, what are the things that excite you the most, that you find most energizing, just getting up and wanting to go in? And when it's Sunday, you're looking just forward to the week. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. So I think in general, the thing that high level that excites me about the data space is just the rapid pace of change and the fact that there's so many different tools, from visualization tools like Tableau or Power BI or ClickSense. And those are constantly evolving and changing. And then you've got your kind of your snowflakes and your MongoDBs and the lookers and all those kinds of technologies. So one of the things that really excites me and really motivates me to get up every day is just the fact of how quickly things can change, and how many different tools and applications there can be to accomplish a goal, and each has its pros and obviously the cons, but really that. So I love that speed of learning, that pace of change, because for me, what I've found is that if I define a problem, then the nice thing, one of the things I love about the data space is that I have my problem, and then I just have this huge repertoire of tools that could fill that gap. And I think that in the data community, that we're very fortunate that we have so many tools to solve a problem, that you have so many choices and that you can kind of pick and blend. And I just really love that. I get really energized by the possibility and the width and depth of what our industry has.
Yeah, we're kind of puzzle makers, right? We're pulling the different pieces of the puzzle together to achieve some objective.
Yeah, and certainly putting things together is part of it. And one of the things you're certainly doing is you're putting together teams, harnessing those tools. What are the things that you find most challenging when trying to get teams to work together on these problems?
So one of the most challenging things I find with teams is to really define and find that commonality in goals. So when I'm creating teams or working with teams, everybody's got their goals and their ways that they define it. And the challenge at times can be seeing what that common denominator is among those goals with the team, so that can thus then guide the team. And that involves a lot of asking questions. I love that the philosophy of kind of the five whys. So start with a statement or a goal and then sit and say, okay, well, why is that the goal? And then talk about that and then say, well, why is that? Why is that? And do that through kind of five iterations. And what I find is that actually will really break down a goal or a vision into its simplest form, a kind of common denominator, so that the team can rally around that. But admittedly, that can be challenging because people come from different places, have different kind of metrics they want to track, or just different experiences, different ways of seeing things. So the challenge is really getting people to find that commonality in what they're doing.
You know, it's interesting that you're talking about really a human problem in this analytics space. So, you know, we certainly tend to focus on in data science on more of the technical solutions, right? We're talking about what type of algorithm we're going to create, or cleaning a data set and prepping a data set and how you're going to visualize it. But what you're talking about is much more of a human approach to the problem. Do you see a distinction there? Do you see the human side of the equation being an important part of a data science or data analyst's role?
Oh, absolutely. And I very much stress the human side and the soft side of any of the hiring that I do, or any of my team members, my customers, my management. I think that the technical data side, it can be complex, and there can be technical issues that we have to resolve, and such as data quality or data flow, obviously architecture, infrastructure. Those can be very complex. Where I focus and where I see more of the bottlenecks is on that human side, where the goals are not defined or the questions are not asked. One of my kind of mottos is that I can teach somebody how to code, or I can teach somebody architecture, but I can't teach you to want to be inquisitive or to really dig in and solve a problem or communicate. So for me, I've found the most success in that human side of what is the true business goals? What are we looking at? The communication, the willingness to be open to new ideas, the willingness to try new things. And I find that when there's more cohesiveness on the human side, that the technical data side falls into place much easier. And that's where I definitely tend to focus, is on that human side, because for me, that's where it starts. So we let the questions, you know, and the goals, let that drive our data, not let our data drive our business goals per se.
Yeah. And well, on the human side is so much harder too, right? I mean, we're talking about irrational, emotional human beings as opposed to a completely irrational code, right? The code just does whatever you tell it to do. When you are building an analysis for the director of finance, they might not do exactly what you tell them to do based on the data.
Yeah, exactly. And there's always going to be a human side to technology. I was having a conversation with a friend the other day about self-driving vehicles and autonomous driving and where that's good, where that's not good, where it still has to go. And we both agreed that there will always be a human aspect to driving, because there's always going to be some kind of situation that a computer couldn't render, or just as advanced as AI is and data science and algorithms, and I totally believe in it. I really also, it's not ever going to be a substitute for the human mind. Well, I guess I hope that none of those sci-fi movies come true. But I really do believe that human side is very key. And it is the most difficult part, because the human mind is so dynamic. And that's both the beauty and the curse of the human mind and how it relates to technology and data.
So that's a good point when you're saying, you know, the human being part of things. And how do you, because I think there's sometimes unrealistic expectations of what data analytics or tools or any of these things can do, right? I mean, partly as these things get sold as, you know, panaceas, but we know that it's not like things just instantly work, and they never work as well as intended and all that. But managing expectations in this space, both for your clients, when you're talking your executives or your external clients, how do you go about managing those expectations and communicating along the way?
Yeah, for me, I think the first thing is really just having an open and honest conversation, talking about the possibilities of analytics as well as the limitations. That's key to understanding. I think really listening is key. I have had the experience where some of the pushback that I'll get with analytics or the expectations can be sometimes out of fear, where people, if they don't understand it or they feel that maybe they'll be automated out of their own job, that's where some anger and frustration and pushback comes. But I think also one of the things that I truly believe in is a feedback cycle, where we'll create an algorithm or have a data insight, but the key to really perfecting that is gathering and interpreting the feedback and then using that to modify the next iteration. And I think what I've experienced is that when I involve people in that feedback and we discuss how important that is to get that feedback and to look at what went well and what didn't, what didn't go well and update our analytics and our algorithms so that the next iteration is much more accurate. I've found that people feel much more receptive to that in the sense that they feel much more part of an iterative business process than I'm just going to feed some stuff into my data science team and they're going to come back and just tell me what to do. So it really creates that partnership, which helps on that human side. But on the data side, I really find the power in analytics and algorithms in that feedback cycle.
That is so true. I mean, both the two things, you know, you mentioned there, the listening component being such a key component, but then also engaging people and being part of the process. Those are really words of wisdom that people should take into account. How do you change data culture and this concept of data literacy throughout the organization? What have you seen gone well, and how have you tried to help push that forward, having a positive data culture and more broadened data literacy within an organization?
Yeah, that's a great question, and I think a lot of people struggle with that. For me, I really like the kind of the quick wins. So go in, do something small or maybe somewhat impactful in a small area or an important area, and have that quick win to show the users in the group, hey, there is value in this data. So something, for example, in a retail environment is doing some KPIs, possibly around returns. So let's look at returns. Are all the sales that are returned from one particular salesperson or say a store location? Is it the same product that's always getting returned that has a higher return proportion? And that typically is fairly base data that an organization may collect. So there wouldn't be a lot of technical challenges in that. But really looking at that one small area and identifying an issue or a potential opportunity for improvement that an organization would have, and that would drive bottom line revenue or your bottom line. And that could be a really quick win that is somewhat simple on the data side, but very impactful for the organization. And then that can help also turn the data culture to, oh, you know, this actually is useful. It can drive revenue, or we can find operational efficiencies. And I find that that definitely helps. I'm also a huge proponent of kind of managing by walking around. I know it's kind of an old term, but I think it's really important to really have that human connection with your customers. So sometimes, and I do this, have the propensity to just kind of sit behind your computer for a day, and you're sitting there typing and you may not be talking to people, or you'll instant message. And that's very efficient from a work standpoint. But I've also found that part of spreading that data culture is really getting out and going to visit your customer, or talking to them or giving them a call, or if you work together with your team, you know, getting up and going to physically talk to them, because it does help to just make a relationship. And I've found that when customers or team have a more personal view, that they tend to be more open-minded and not see you as just the IT person that comes in the room, or, hey, that person always creates more work, or they cause problems, or I don't like them, or I don't know what they're doing over there. And I find that kind of that personal side of it can really help make a data culture, just in the sense of there is a lot of misunderstanding and mystification around analytics. So outside the community, people will hear the words. They'll hear big data, or they'll hear cloud or visualization. And they kind of know a little bit about what it is, but not that much. And then when they start hearing that within the context of their jobs or their businesses, there can be fear, and that's very natural. And so I think a huge part of driving data culture is just that personal connection, so that then that can take that wall down a little, that you can have a constructive conversation about, well, this actually is good for your business. So this is good for your job, and here's why. So it's really that human connection and understanding that there could be fear. There is a person valuing their opinion, you know, listening. Nobody knows everything. I think in the data community, sometimes we lose sight of that. And I think that's really important for driving that data culture, is really those quick wins and that personal connection.
Yeah, it sounds like, you know, what you're talking about is really building trust between two teams and two people, which will then foster more trust in the data and the approaches.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, you think about it from your personal life and your personal perspective. Many people are more likely to take the opinion of somebody they know or somebody they trust more than a random, you know, professional. So I think that's absolutely key.
Great. So, you know, Rachel, you've worked with a lot of different organizations. You've worked internally with teams. It sounds like you do some consulting outside of your organization for your customers as well. If you were to define the perfect data-informed organization, an organization who's perfectly effectively using their data, what would that look like in practice?
Oh, that's a great question. I think that perfect kind of data organization would really kind of have a few steps in their process, and it would definitely be iterative. So I think, one, starting with your goal. So irrelevant to your data, just what is your business goal? And usually that would be something extremely high level. Like, we want to make more revenue, or we want to decrease our cost or increase quality. Then I think breaking that down into sub-goals of something that would be a little bit more granular. So something like, well, we want to make more revenue by increasing the average spend of a customer. So look at something that will get you to your goal, but not considering data at this point. And then just really start continuing from a business perspective to look, you know, how can you achieve this? So brainstorm the business questions to ask to understand why something is happening, and continue that process to keep getting supplementary questions. And then that would be where the team is ready to start incorporating that data aspect. So for example, kind of in the retail environment, is if you keep breaking that down and we say, okay, well, we want to know how long that period is between, say, a purchase and a return, what type of data would we need to capture that? And that's where you would say, oh, well, we probably need the date purchased, the date returned, and then some math calculation to find the difference. And then that's really where your data analysts step in to identify where is that data stored, and we write the algorithm. So I think a perfect data organization really starts with the business and incorporates the business and then the data. And I found that to be the most successful. So from an organizational chart perspective, I have found it to be very, very, very effective to have your data analytics team sit within the business more than sitting with IT, because I really do believe that human side, the goals, the business knowledge is absolutely key to a successful data analytics program.
What would you say is your biggest failure that you have learned from in your career around that data culture at an organization?
I'm kind of personally not a true believer that there's ever failure if you learn from it. So one of my favorite quotes is, you know, I didn't find the way to make a light bulb. I found 100 ways to not make a light bulb. And that's one of my favorite quotes. But for me personally, when I've found projects that weren't, successful, I think some of that was attributed to the fact of not bringing in all of the stakeholders or liaisons for all of the stakeholders, in the sense that there are some organizations that will partake or kind of undertake the analytics journey, and you've got your executive sponsor and kind of the leaders of certain areas, and everybody agrees, and that's great, and we move forward. And then what happened was that people kind of forgot to really get the end user's perspective. So it might be a great application or a great program, but if the ultimate end user is not considered, that could kind of derail some of the project. So I can give you an example, not really the organization name, but we were working on kind of an intake application, and it gathered all the data that we wanted and all of the metrics, and that was great. And then when we implemented it, the adoption wasn't quite as high as we had hoped. And ultimately what happened was that the end users found kind of the way that they had to enter the data quite laborious. And when things got busy, they were just bypassing things. I don't have time to click here and do all of this or type all of this in. And they were just bypassing. And so what was happening was low user adoption, and then some of the data that we wanted to capture, we weren't. And it really caused the team to go back and say, hey, we really need to sit and think about how is the end user actually using this. So when they're really busy, can they click here? Can they click here? Is the print big enough for them to see? Or just is it, you know, refresh properly? So I think that's a really big key to that, which is partially why I really like design thinking theory, in the sense that really sit and look at the true end user and how they're actually going to be using something, or how does it actually fit to their job? And then let's design around that.
Yeah, certainly the design thinking, human-centered design practices are really important. And that's a great example, and goes back to you, your example of failure, like you said, is really learning from that failure is a success. And so I can see how, you know, even your answer earlier goes right to that same learning out of that case. So that's a great, thanks for sharing that with us. So one thing I wanted to make sure to hit on before we wrap up, because I know we're getting close to almost an hour recording already. So, I know you're involved in a lot of groups, and Matt and myself are both also involved in the Twin Cities area in different groups, but can you talk about some of the groups in Atlanta around analytics that you've been involved in, and why you find those so beneficial to not only, you know, attend, but really commit your time to, because that's above and beyond.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of great organizations in Atlanta, I can give you some of my favorites. So there's a great organization called Data Science Connect, DSC, and they're a really great organization for sharing ideas. One of the things I love about them is they will have forums that are not necessarily technology specific, but industry specific. So we'll talk about an industry like legal or automotive, and then all of the data implications within that industry. So I love that group, Data Science Connect. There's also another group I love called the Association of Information Technology Professionals, AITP for short. That's a great organization. It's actually one of the oldest networking organizations in Atlanta. And they meet monthly, It's a great organization to talk about different trends. So we've been talking about machine learning and serverless computing and healthcare tech. That's a great organization in Atlanta as well. Also involved in the Atlanta chapter of She Talks Data, very popular organization across the country that really is getting women more involved in data. And one of the things I love about that organization is that it is very centered on the human side of data. So we do talk about women and their careers and their challenges, but also that human side of data and challenges that are with customers or just processes or ideas. So I love that. One of the other organizations that I also really love is called Tech Alpharetta. And Alpharetta is kind of a tech suburb north of Atlanta. And Tech Alpharetta is kind of a somewhat of an incubator for startups. And I love that organization because it's a lot of exposure to different ideas and kind of startup companies, not necessarily data related, really. They really kind of work across a lot of different spectrums. But it's a great place to just go and feel energized by ideas and talking to different professionals. It's a great organization. I definitely urge people to look into that. And the last one that I really love is called WIT, Women in Technology. And that is not data centered, but it is also a great organization that looks at getting younger girls involved in STEM careers. It does a lot with career exploration and betterment. There are men that are members of WIT, so it's not exclusive to women, but they do a lot just within the Atlanta area to spread knowledge of STEM-related careers and topics.
Awesome. That sounds like a lot of good groups and a good variety of things happening. And it's good to hear the energy and that you're getting involved in those groups. And I encourage anyone wherever they're at, this is one of those things that you're part of a community, whether that community is, you know, the community that you identify professionally or just your locality, you know, make sure to get involved. So, and there's a lot of good groups out there on Meetup and other sites to figure those out. So, before we wrap up, Rachel, how would people find you online if they wanted to reach out to you? They said, hey, this person I just click with, I want to, you know, learn more and connect with. How would they do that?
Yeah, so I'm on LinkedIn. So people can look me up, Rachel Stuve, based in Atlanta. I'm on LinkedIn. My profile's there. I'd love to connect with people on LinkedIn. And then I do respond to the direct messages through LinkedIn as well. So that's really the best way to reach me.
Excellent. That's a great way. And really appreciate your time today, Rachel. It was fantastic talking with you and learning from what you're doing in Atlanta and also being a former Midwesterner. Maybe there's hope for Matt and myself to get out of the winter ourselves sometime. But
yeah, well, I think your hometown would be very sad if you left because it sounds like you're doing some really great things there.
Well, maybe just for winter time.
Yeah, that's true.
So, but I hope we are able to connect at an event or when we're down in Atlanta next, we can meet up with you. And if you're ever up in the cities, look forward to, you know, grabbing coffee or taking you out to lunch.
Yeah, definitely. That would be really great. I'd love to meet you both in person. Thank you so much for all of your time and the effort and all of the organization and coordination that you've done. I love listening to the podcast. It's a great way for me to connect with people outside of the people that I would meet locally. So I really do. Atlanta's a great market, but that's one of the things I really love about your podcast is that it's exposure to people that I wouldn't geographically or physically have access to, that I have reached out and had conversations or you get to know, or just the different, oh yeah, that happened to me, or oh, that's a great idea, I should try that.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Rachel, and have a great week. We'll chat again.
The Data Able podcast is produced by Dave Mathias and Matt Jesser and made possible by Beyond the Data. At Beyond the Data, we are on a mission to help high-performing individuals successfully become champions for a more data-driven approach in their organizations. We believe that data science is only part of the equation. Getting value out of data requires building a culture that starts with you, is supported by executives, and trickles down to every facet of your organization. You can learn more about Beyond the Data and our approach at gobeyondthedata.com.